from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen.
Harry, what's the matter? You're on the air.
I know I'm on the air. I don't need a talking computer to tell me I'm on the air. Ralph, thank you. I'm just a little down, you know. This happens every once every 20, 21 years.
Oh, crap. Are you feeling sorry for yourself again? This happens once every battery charge, as far as I can tell.
Well, maybe you're not paying attention, Rob. Yes. I think it's fair to say, check me if I'm wrong, that the listenership of this program is at the very least in the four figures.
Okay, counting worldwide.
Yes.
Sure,
okay.
High four figures.
Thank you.
Easy.
All right. So what...
But you've never cared about ratings.
No.
At least, that's what you tell reporters. Me, I'll bet that, come pledge drive time, you're checking up on the pledge board every hour or so.
Ralph, computers don't bet.
We do know. There's software that lets us place bets on the internet according to an algorithm of the odds without any human interface.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Okay, great. I'm glad. But I'm just saying, my point is simply, there's at least four digits worth of people listening to this program.
Around the world.
Around the world, yes. And, and, you know, then I look at the sales figures for the CD that's out, Dropping Anchors, right, that consists of some very funny stuff from this show, you know, tarted up, freshened up, updated, so forth. And
wait a minute. Where do you see sales figures?
Well, it's on, you know, it's computerized. It's all computerized now. You see them right away. And
what have I told you about trusting computers?
You've told me there's only one I can trust.
And which one is that?
It's you. It's you. Your point being that those figures aren't...
Forget about my point.
Mm.
What's your point? Shows on the air. Time's a waste.
I know the show's on the air. Okay, so I'm just saying I'm feeling down. I'm feeling like I should strike out in some way. I feel like I should go Howard Stern on my audience. That's what I'm feeling. Like the way he, you know, when not enough of his listeners followed him to Sirius satellite radio, he just sort of unloaded on them. And
what do you want to do? Spank your listeners for not buying your CD?
No, that's ridiculous. Well, not all of them. You know, maybe just like the young Asian female ones.
Harry, snap out of it. You couldn't go Howard Stern if your best friend was Stuttering John. Look, I know how you feel.
What do you mean you know how I feel? You're a computer, Ralph.
Thanks for the product information. Dude, I know how you feel because I downloaded something called E-Empathy last night.
E-Empathy.
It's kind of bloatware, but it lets me tune into your emotional state pretty damn well.
All right, let's just assume that E-Empathy is satisfactory for the purpose, even though it's bloatware. What am I feeling right now, Ralph?
You're feeling betrayed and abandoned.
Mm.
You're feeling disappointed and angry.
Mm.
Right about now, you'd like Robin to do some news.
Oh boy, would I ever. Man, that's pretty good. So what should I do?
Are you nuts?
What?
You think I've got advice software?
Look,
Harry, get serious. We're in New Orleans.
Mm.
People's houses have been destroyed, their lives have been ruined, and you're feeling bad about not enough of your listeners buying your CD.
I guess it's kind of stupid, isn't it?
It's very stupid.
Yeah.
I wasn't that hot about the CD anyway.
What?
I wasn't on it, was I?
This is not about you.
That's not what the empathy is telling me. Hello, welcome to the show.
Ow! Mama, come here quick and bring that licking stick. Mama, come. the backyard doing an outside dance. I'm telling me the other day she didn't want to be a drag. I don't know what she's doing. I think she's got a brand new bag. Mama, come here quick and bring me that licking stick. Mama, come here quick and bring that licking stick. Now look at him, Judy, don't kill me with his laser strokes. When he take his feet right off the ground, doing the mashed potatoes, and then he began to slide, call himself doing the James Brown. Sister says the dance you're doing is the latest thing. People now begin to talk. She jumped back in that sofa stride. She's doing the camel walk. Mama, come here quick and bring me that licking stick. Whoopah. Mama, come here quick, get it, and bring that licking stick. Mama, come here quick and give me that licking stick. Sister, get out in there with your bare self. One more time. Mama, come here quick and bring that licking stick. Missy, oh, all right.
We really didn't know until Sunday morning that Harry was probably going to be okay.
No, there's no probably about it, Dick. I'm fine. I really am fine. Thank you so much for your consideration and your care. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, from New Orleans, Louisiana, not the French Quarter, from Lakefront, the Lakefront campus of the University of New Orleans, of all places, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Always a new location in New Orleans. That's one of the exciting things about this city, as we're days away. What is it now? Yeah, like 4 days away from the start of hurricane season. And nobody, of course, is mentioning that.
around the clock on radio and television. But there are other stories that need our attention, ladies and gentlemen, such as this. Toy giant Hasbro this week scrapped plans for a new line of dolls based on the R-rated girl group, the Pussycat Dolls. No doll dolls. No dolls dolls. It came after this decision came after the company, Hasbro, received mounting pressure from a grassroots protest by parents. See? It does work. As long as it's about dolls. The number two toy maker, which had planned to market the racy dolls to girls as young as six, bowed to a letter-writing campaign launched by Brooklyn mom Lisa Flythe. Flythe. "Every single person I spoke to was shocked that this would even be considered," said Flythe, 43, who has a four-year-old daughter. "It could be an appropriate adult entertainment product," she said, "but definitely not for kids." Flythe wrote to Hasbro officials last month after hearing about the outrageous plans for the dolls based on the dolls, a campy burlesque group of dancers. They're hugely popular with teenagers. They have a crossover hit with their song, "Don'tcha," featuring lyrics about group sex. Yeah, your point being? The kids' dolls were supposed to start at $15 and were slated to come out this fall just in time for the holidays. Parents were instantly upset about it, says Josh Golan of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. Your point being? They're scantily clad. Their lyrics are sexual, Golan added. The group, along with another organization called Dads and Daughters, started urging members to write to Hasbro with their concerns about the dolls. The campaign just started Monday. Within hours, the company had been flooded by 2,000 letters and emails and decided to kill the project, much to the delight of Flythe. This isn't Heidi Flythe. This is Lisa Flythe from Brooklyn. Quote, "Once the juggernaut starts rolling, it can be hard to stop it," she said, unquote. I guess that would be the definition of a juggernaut, wouldn't it? Good. Aren't all juggernauts hard to stop? Hence, their juggernautus, juggernauthood. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get scared. Greenhouse gases are known to spur global warming. Scientists said this week that global warming spurs greenhouse gas emissions. You get a little feedback loop thing going? Gets nice and toasty. Earth could get hotter faster than current climate models predict, because they're so linear, don't you know? Two scientific teams, one in Europe and another in California, have reached the same basic conclusion. When Earth has warmed up in the past due to the sun's natural cycles, more greenhouse gases have been emitted into the atmosphere. As greenhouse gas levels rose, so did Earth's temperature, the scientists reported. You see how it works? It's like a mirror game in the improv world. Earth has not endlessly warmed up, though, because these natural solar cycles ended, letting the planet cool down and prompting a corresponding drop in greenhouse gas emissions. But these previous periods of heating and cooling were not influenced by the burning of fossil fuels and the current resulting trend toward higher global average temperatures, according to Margaret Thorne of Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. "It means the warming is happening faster. Each decade is actually warming faster than it would have," Torn said. "It's the pace of change that will be one of the big problems. It's how humans adapt and the cost that will depend on the rate of change of climate." So we're guinea pigs for ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. You know, and who better to be guinea pigs for ourselves than us? We'll be apologizing, I'm sure, for all of this in the time to come. But now, ladies and gentlemen, time for news for Outside the Bubble. And it's bubblicious. It's bubblific. British troops could spend up to four more years in Iraq after Tony Blair reached agreement with the country's new prime minister on the phased handover of control to civilian authorities. Blair flew to Baghdad, you know, amid tight security this week to show support for the National Unity Government. Blair stressed the transition to Iraqi security forces would depend on conditions on the ground. British sources hinted that up to 1,000 of the 8,000-strong British troops in Iraq could be home this year, but they warned that a handover to civilian authorities would not immediately lead to a swift pullout, dashing Blair's hopes of bringing the troops home before he leaves 10 Downing Street next summer. As if to underline that, from Knight Ridder newspaper, southern Iraq, long touted as a peaceful region that's likely to be among the first areas returned to Iraqi control, is now dominated by Shiite, Muslim warlords and militiamen who are laying the groundwork for an Islamist fundamentalist government, say senior British and Iraqi officials in the area. The militias appear to be supported by Iranian intelligence or military units that are shipping weapons to the militias in Iraq and providing training for them in Iran. Parenthetically, the deputy Iraqi foreign minister said late this week that Iran has the right to develop peaceful nuclear reactors. Something we probably don't want to hear him say. Some British officials believe the Iranians want to hasten the withdrawal of U.S.-backed coalition forces to pave the way for Iran-friendly clerical rule. That doesn't mean by clerics either. Iranian influence is evident throughout the area in one government office. An aide approached a Knight Ridder reporter, mistaking him for an Iranian, said, "Don't be afraid to speak Farsi in Basra. We are a branch of Iran." Military training courses are being run in Iran, says Lieutenant Colonel David LaBouchere, who commands British units in the province of Maysan, north of Basra. People are training on the other side of the border and then coming back. More. News from outside the bubble continues. No reason for it to stop now. British military officials suspect that the missile that was used to shoot down a British helicopter over Basra earlier this month came from Iran. American military officials in Baghdad often point to the relatively low number of attacks against British soldiers in southern Iraq as proof that much of the country is stable. Last month, at least 200 people were killed in Basra, almost all of them by militia violence. A week with British troops in the provinces south of Baghdad make it clear that Iraqis there are at the mercy of Shiite militia death squads and Iran-friendly clerics who have imposed an ever stricter code of de facto Islamic law. The city of Basra has largely come under the control of Shiite clerics who have banned alcohol sales. A woman without a headscarf is a rare sight. Record shops have been replaced with stores selling Quranic recordings. It's difficult to purchase chess or backgammon sets. The games are frowned upon by hardline religious leaders. Iraq's top Shiites acknowledge they want to set up a regional government in the south, but they insist that the provinces involved would remain loyal to the central government in Baghdad. But an Iran-friendly Shiite government in the south could have far-reaching effects on Iraq and the Persian Gulf region and on the strategic position of U.S. military forces in the country. Human rights in Iraq are being severely undermined by growing insecurity. Hey, join the club. Who doesn't have growing insecurity? You know, it's the 21st century. Violence and a breakdown of law and order caused by militias and criminal gangs. That's a report from the UN mission in Baghdad this week. The human rights update issued every 2 months by the UN assistance mission in Iraq cites soaring numbers of execution-style killings in Baghdad. Such slayings have increased during a surge of sectarian violence. Baghdad's main morgue issued 1,155 death certificates in April. I don't know what that number is supposed to mean. The count corroborated a statement by Iraqi President Talabani, who this month cited morgue figures and saying more than 1,000 people have been killed in Baghdad alone in April. The Shiite-controlled health ministry had denied the figure, saying morgue officials had accidentally given him the wrong tally. So they're arguing about how many people are killed. The rights mission also said the figures covered only slaying victims who had not been identified, which suggests the overall death toll in Baghdad has been far higher than any official figure so far made public. Execution-style killings have soared as high as a reported 70 a day in Baghdad. Police and the militias of Iraq's governing Shiite religious parties are suspected in many of the killings. International rights workers said that Shiite parties put pressure on medical authorities not to report the true death toll. Sunni Muslim groups have also been reported to hold summary trials and executions, the UN noted. The UN mission also called for urgent action on promoting the rule of law, saying the need was particularly urgent with respect to internal regulations and accountability systems. Police are run by the Interior Ministry, which is controlled by Shiite religious parties. The report said that the Interior Ministry, which has no legal authority to hold detainees for more than short periods, was holding 5,000 prisoners at the end of last month. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, that in all the hoopla about a new Iraqi government being named last week, one of the two key ministries not yet filled with an appointment for the person running it is the Interior Ministry. Just two, the Interior Ministry and the Defense Ministry, because those aren't important to a nation in shape that they're in. The new Iraq, more on the new Iraq. The coach of the Iraqi national tennis team and two of his players were shot dead in Baghdad for wearing shorts in a district where Islamic radicals have started to enforce Taliban-style law. We've brought the Taliban to Iraq. Hussein Ahmed Rashid was shot at close range with two of his players, according to a National Olympic Committee official. One of the players wearing shorts had left the car to drop off some items at a laundry. When he returned to the vehicle, gunmen in a gray car swerved and blocked the player's car. 3 minutes, civilian clothes surrounded the car and ordered the passengers to get out. When they refused, one of the men produced a revolver and shot the players. The coach sat helplessly in the back while the assailants dragged out the players' bodies and dumped them in the road. The dead men were wearing green sports jerseys emblazoned with the word Iraq. An Iraqi National Guard checkpoint was about 100 meters from the site of the ambush, but the soldiers did nothing, according to witnesses. They added gunmen had used the same car in the past 2 months during attacks on others. In addition, men are forbidden from wearing goatee beards, and anyone is forbidden from buying mayonnaise, according to a leaflet that has been spread around the neighborhood by radicals. The leaflet threatens violators with death. Death for mayonnaise. Are these gourmet Taliban? Guess you have to make your own mayonnaise in the new Iraq. How about the new Afghanistan? The Taliban are not the only enemy facing the 7,000-strong force of NATO troops now in Afghanistan. 4 years and billions of dollars later, according to the British newspaper The Guardian, the Afghan government and its Western backers have failed to draw the southern provinces. The South. It's the South. In all these countries, it's the South. It's just like this country. It's the South. It's the South, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you go, it's the South, except in Australia, where it's the North. Have failed to draw the southern provinces into the central government. Now they are hemorrhaging support rapidly. The difficult state of central authority is most evident in Helmand province. The police are corrupt, government departments defunct, and despite years of disarmament, guns are everywhere. The Taliban rule the night. Sounds like a good poster. The central government is all but invisible. The new Afghanistan. And meanwhile, what's happening in Iran? I'll tell you what's happening in Iran. Iran closed the newspaper and detained its chief editor and cartoonist this week for publishing a cartoon that sparked riots by ethnic Azeris, the first such move since President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad came to power last year. Cartoons make trouble all over the world. The response was a sign of the hardline government's concern over any internal divisions amid its confrontation with the United States and suggested there were worries the United States may try to stir up trouble. Who? Us? Among Iran's ethnic minorities. Might it even be a U.S.-spawned cartoon? Let's read further. The indefinite closure of the state-run newspaper Iran came after it published a cartoon of a cockroach speaking Azeri, the language of Iran's largest ethnic minority. I guess they don't like cockroaches there either. Iranian officials quickly apologized for the slur. Oh, it's an apology. Didn't make the cut. And stressed the nation's unity in the standoff with Washington. It is clear that the evil hands of foreigners are making efforts to promote or to provoke tribal, ethnic, and religious differences under the present circumstances, said state public prosecutor Gorban Ali Dori Najafabadi. Our nation is vigilant, he added, and hates the United States. Okay, as long as that's clear. Hundreds of Azeris marched in the northwestern city of Tabriz protesting against the cartoon. Some broke windows of the governor's office. Police used tear gas to disperse the demonstrators. Azeris are a Turkic ethnic group They make up about a quarter of Iran's 70 million people. Azeris speak a Turkic language shared by their brethren in neighboring Azerbaijan. They were angered by the cartoon that suggested Azeris are stupid. It showed people from different walks of life, including an athlete and a tradesman, trying to teach the cockroach, and he always answers in Azeri, "What do you mean?" That's pretty good, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pretty damn good cartoon. I know. We had Polish jokes, you know. Everybody's got to think somebody's stupid, don't you think? Shouldn't there be just a worldwide agreement and people just stop bitching about it? Because it's clearly a deep-seated human need to have somebody in the immediate vicinity that even the stupidest among us, and by us I mean, you know, us, people who run the place, can view as stupid. And in Iran, it's the Azeris, I guess. There was no explanation why the protests broke out more than a week after the cartoon appeared. Well, it took them that long to get it? No! I'm kidding, see? That's the kind of joke that would get Azeris demonstrating. The Iranian culture minister, speaking on television, apologized for the drawing. But the Azeri legislator said the apology came at least 1 week too late. Well, it so did the demonstrate. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. As we say farewell to Desmond Dekker. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Still in the Middle East. Well, vaguely referring to the Middle East. Dateline Ottawa, not really the Middle East, but just wait a minute, will you? Canadian newspaper National Post has apologized that a front page story that alleged Iran may force non-Muslims to wear colored badges in public is not true. You know that old Henry Kissinger quote? He's talking, I guess, to Nixon. And at one point he says, apropos of something he's just said, it has the added advantage of being true. So this story had the added disadvantage of being not true. The editor-in-chief of the National Post, who has often criticized Iran, today said on page 2 of the conservative newspaper, it is now clear the story is not true, and he apologized. The story published on Saturday, of a couple weeks ago, gave reference to human rights groups who alleged the Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians in Iran would be forced to wear a yellow, red, or blue strip of cloth, respectively, on the front of their clothes. Unlike those bracelets that we're all wearing here, just because we want to. Governments in Canada, Australia, and the United States expressed outrage at the mere possibility of such a law. The story was later denied by a Jewish member of Iran's parliament as a complete fabrication. The paper has apologized. Do we know how they got the story? No, we do not. Moving on. Moments after Monroe County Circuit Judge Richard Payne in Florida exonerated Orlando Boschete of the sexual assault of a woman more than two decades ago and apologized to Boschete and apologized to the man for his time in prison, he was again led away in handcuffs. Boschete was taken into custody awaiting federal immigration and customs officials who ordered the Cuban native and former Miamian held for an immigration judge on possible removal proceedings on what the ICE calls administrative charges. He was cleared of the assault by DNA evidence. The judge, Payne, apologized to Boschete for an earlier trial in which the man was sent to prison for 55 years, a crime the court now says the 1980 Cuban migrant did not commit. No words will do justice for the penalty you had to pay, the judge said. It is the court's responsibility to make sure the innocents are set free. Moments later, he was handcuffed and led away. I had never heard of this magazine, but, quote, many of you have previously received a copy of the May-June issue of this magazine in which our printer placed the pages in the wrong order. Please accept this corrected copy with our apologies. And, of course, the apology was printed. The apology were not reprinted in reverse order, so that's good news, too. Dateline, Bali, an Indonesian man accused of involvement in last year's suicide bombings on the resort island of Bali, this week apologized at his trial. Prosecutors accuse Abdul Aziz of creating a website calling for attacks against Westerners, of harboring an alleged mastermind of the Bali bombings. I'm really sorry for what I've done. I apologize to the people of Bali and the people of Indonesia. Abdul Aziz is quoted telling judges. Aziz also thanked police and Indonesian government for treating him well. Judges threw out his lawyer's argument that the Bali court had no jurisdiction to try him on the ground that his alleged crime took place somewhere else. President Chen Shui-bian is the most apologetic chief of state in Taiwan's brief annals of democratic government, maybe in world history as well. He has apologized 10 times in the 6 years of his presidency. 2 months after he was sworn in, President Chen offered his first apology for the police failure to rescue 4 people marooned in a swollen river. He apologized twice on July 25th and 31 of that year. A month and a half later, the president apologized for the late relief to victims of the July floods. After that spate of apologies in the first year of his first term, President Chen didn't say sorry for a little more than 3 more years, but he's catching up again. A Sumner County, now we get to graduation apologies, ladies and gentlemen. None were required, by the way, at the fabulous Goucher College in Baltimore, where this week the host of this program got an honorary doctorate, so I can now write you some honorary prescriptions if you need any. But here we go. A Sumner County, Tennessee valedictorian charged with disorderly conduct for a stunt he pulled during Gallatin High's graduation ceremony was allowed to pick up his diploma. Chris Lindsay, 18, got in trouble at the ceremony because he grabbed a microphone and tried to give a speech he wasn't authorized to make. He apologized this week and explained that he was protesting the school's longstanding tradition of inviting the student body president and not the valedictorian to speak at commencement. Well, you know, just be more popular next time, babe. quote, "I feel extremely passionate about my cause, but this does in no way justify my disruptive behavior," he wrote in his letter of apology to the school board and faculty. "I apologize to my fellow students, their parents, and their relatives, and their friends for any disturbance this has caused." And a University of St. Thomas, Minnesota, honors graduate who scolded his fellow seniors at the commencement ceremony for being selfish, apologized this week for offending people during his politically charged speech. Ben Kessler, an academic All-America football player who plans to become a priest, chastised students for using birth control, criticized them for a food fight, and upheld the university, which is located in St. Paul, its controversial policy against allowing unmarried faculty and staff members in romantic relationships to room together on school trips that involve students. "Then he got into other failures of society, and one of my classmates next to me stood up and left," said a student, a graduating senior whose family traveled from Hong Kong for the celebration. In a prepared statement released by the school, Kessler said he had tried in his speech to look back at some issues faced by the university and society and then look ahead. "Instead of providing hope for all, I offended some by my words," Kessler said. "I sincerely apologize to each person I offended." His speech prompted booing and walkouts. "He started out pretty well, and then out of nowhere come these bombshells about things he'd seen that irritated him," said a graduating senior. "The heart of the speech was about making selfish decisions, so when I went up to get my diploma afterwards," said the student, "I told him he'd made some good points about being selfish, and that he was selfish enough to ruin hundreds of people's graduations. Several students were seen crying. Others hollered to get Kessler off the stage." "I thought a riot would break out," said one student. "At one point, he was talking about the meaning of true happiness, and someone stood up and screamed, 'I'll be happy when your speech is done.'" No one in the school administration read Kessler's speech beforehand because it has never been an issue in the past. Kessler gave the speech because he had won the prestigious honor of Tommy of the Year. The Tommy of the Year typically congratulates everyone and wishes them well. The president of the school accepted Kessler's apology. Tommy of the Year, ladies and gentlemen. Why would you be ticked off about that? Also in the collegiate world, members of Northwestern University's women's soccer team have apologized for an alleged hazing incident that prompted school officials to suspend the team. The apology appeared Monday in the school's student newspaper. The players say they, quote, "fully accept responsibility for their behavior." They say the incident doesn't reflect the values, integrity, and qualities they seek to embody as a women's soccer team. School suspended them indefinitely after photographs of the alleged hazing incident appeared on the internet that show some players wearing only T-shirts and underwear. Some are blindfolded. Some have their hands tied behind their back. Some show players apparently drinking alcohol. Imagine, athletes. Minnesota Vikings quarterbacks Fred Smoot and left tackle Brant McKinney pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges stemming from that team's raucous boat party last fall. Smoot and McKinney had been scheduled to go on trial. Neither player was in court. Smoot apologized through his lawyer to the family of the Vikings owner, Ziggy Wilf, the team's coaches and fans, the people of Minnesota, and the employees of Al's and Alma's Restaurant and Cruises. "I used poor judgment and take responsibility for my actions," Smoot said. "I have learned a valuable lesson. I regret tarnishing the reputation of the Minnesota Vikings and the National Football League." The owner of the team said the boat party was not consistent with the values and high standards we expect on a pro football team. A Roman Catholic priest accused of stealing more than $800,000 from his church to finance a lavish lifestyle of vacations, country clubs, and fancy clothes pleaded guilty Friday to grand larceny. Monsignor John Woolsey, pastor of the Church of St. John the Martyr on Manhattan's Upper East Side, entered the plea as part of a deal. Gets a minimum sentence of 1 year in prison. Woolsey told the court he believed he was entitled to spend some of his money at his discretion, but he admitted spending significantly more than could have been legal. He admitted he stole more than $50,000. "I am deeply sorry for my actions, and I apologize for my conduct," he said. Well, if you're a priest on the Upper East Side, you got to fit in, don't you? Christian Brando, held in contempt of court for his behavior during the Robert Blake civil trial, apologized profusely to a judge this week, saying, quote, "I have to watch my mouth." He was fined $1,000. Brando mouthed words when he left the stand when he testified in the trial, including, quote, he did it, and an expletive. This interfered with the processes of the court, said the judge. He ordered Brando to either defend himself or apologize. Your Honor, Brando said, I deeply, deeply, too deeply, apologize for my conduct. This has been going on for 5 years. I had absolutely nothing to do with this. I meant no disrespect for your honor or your court. I have to watch my mouth. He said when he testified, he felt overwhelmed. Quote, when I'm overwhelmed, I lose it sometimes. I'm taking medication for that. Medication for losing it while you're overwhelmed. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, 50 years after a bus boycott made history in the city, the Tallahassee, Florida Democrat has apologized to readers for the paper's editorial position at the time that its editor acknowledges clearly took the side of the segregationists. It really is never too late. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Light you, garland falls, an opening night's excite you. I don't have my name in lights, I'm just a simple boy. Don't you hesitate to call me. When only second best will do. Cover girls wearing pearls inspire you. French champagne and designer clothes incite you. You're not in the magazines, you're just a simple girl. Don't you hesitate to call me. When only second best will do. Why do we wanna live in a fantasy? There's a better place for you and me, right here in reality. Is this love? It's what dreams are made of. I hope you never have to settle for even less. Support you, give you three screaming kids to annoy you. Expect the worst and we won't be disappointed. Don't you hesitate to call me. When only second best will do. When only second best will do.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know that President Bush and British Prime Minister Blair held a joint news conference this week, at which President Bush was asked the following question.
Mr. President, you spoke about missteps and mistakes in Iraq. Could I ask which missteps and mistakes of your own you most regret?
You know, it sounds like kind of a familiar refrain here. Saying, bring it on. Kind of tough talk, you know, that sent the wrong signal to people. That I learned some lessons about expressing myself maybe in a little more sophisticated manner. You know, wanted dead or alive. that kind of talk. I think in certain parts of the world it was misinterpreted, and so I learned from that.
Some of the sophisticated manner on display as the president tries to learn to express himself in that more sophisticated manner. By the way, he was critical of that sounding like a familiar refrain. He should have checked the rest of his own remarks. And Tony Blair, I think, got high marks for perspicacity when he said, in response to the same question, quote, "I think it's easy to go back over mistakes that we have made, but the biggest reason why Iraq has been difficult is the determination by our opponents to defeat us," unquote. Yeah, that always makes those wars so much more difficult when your opponents want to beat you. So the president, now this was covered by a lot of news media as a new landmark for the president in apologizing or saying he regretted saying bring it on, although some reporters have gone back and said that he regretted the same thing as early as beginning of 2005. And he also regretted Abu Ghraib, as he pronounced it. And he had regretted that before, too. So the regrets aren't new, but this was on primetime national television. And of course, that makes it new to so many observers. Nonetheless, there may have been a phone call that followed that appearance.
Regretful Eagle. Hey, 43. Good to talk to you. 41. Haven't heard from you since before you had the news conference where you had to prop up Tony Blair. The player bear was looking a little under exuberant, wasn't he? Hey, you try picking up the load he's been carrying for 4 years now. Meaning you. Well, you know the saying, pride goeth before the fall. Well, that may be the Episcopal version. The real version is pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. But that's not the saying I was about to say.
Uh-huh.
I was indicative of no man stands so tall as when he stoops to help a brother. The tone bone has stumbled on the path, popularity poll-wise, and he needed a transfusion of your pole magic. See, 43, remember that you were pretty critical of a certain Republican president named Bush when his pole numbers went down the poop chute. Not criticizing you for being as unpopular as the late period Nixon. Just trying to sap my will is all. 41, this war on terror, this war... This is all about will. The good Lord put Karl Rove on this earth to fret about polls. I got to keep my eye fixed on the big pixel. That's what I kept telling the Blair Project.
Might seem to some folks you thought you had a haughty spirit, you know, apologizing after all for bring it on.
I don't think that was about a haughty spirit. That was just about self-expressification in a more sophomoric manner.
You mean sophisticated?
Yes, sir. I got my sophistries all mixed up. But see, that doesn't negify my humbleness of spirit. When you're reminded every 6 months or so by your critics about your days as a lost soul, you know, it kind of keeps your spirit humble.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Barr will be glad to hear it.
Oh, please tell her I said so.
Will do. Wouldn't mind if there was going to be a bit more sophistication in the policy end, too.
You know, 41, it's easy to have moral clarity when everything's going good. Then moral clarity seems, you know, downright sensible. But when things are going bad and everybody thinks you're sitting on the top of a bubble, that's when, you know, it's different. But you know, that's been the advantage of Dick Cheney living in the secure, undisclosed location all this time. You know, by the time we needed it, he already had a really good bunker mentality.
So your attorney general, Mr. Gonzalez, was threatening to quit?
Yeah, over that evidence the FBI seized.
Uh-huh. At a time when your Hispanic base is ticked off at you about immigration. A little early to be losing an attorney general with an EZ at the end of his name, isn't it? You really did call just to taunt me. But really that satisfying seeing me finally come up with something I could regret in public?
Now, Sprout.
You don't think I spend endless nights not getting to sleep until 10, just sick with anxiety about putting men like Don Rumsfeld, Steve Hadley, and Zalmay Khalilzad in harm's way?
Suppose you do.
Mm-hmm. Just think it's what I used to tell you when you were in second grade.
Oh, brother, here it comes.
Only pick the number of fights you think you can win. You don't need another fight with Congress right now. You know, they're already spending half of their time trying to figure out how not to get their pictures taken with you. Sir, as I say to my Hispanic friends, por favor, canten ustedes el anthem en inglés.
Mm-hmm. And that means?
It means please sing the national anthem in English. See, special interests and the Congress are also trying to break my will. The insurgents are watching C-SPAN, too, you know.
I didn't even know they got C-SPAN 1.
No, that's not what
Not up on Osama's viewing habits, though he's clearly been taking production tips from vintage hostage videos. But look here, 43. You got Jim Baker. You got Brent Scowcroft. All sorts of heavyweights standing by, ready to help you manage your foreign policy in a more sophisticated manner. Not saying you have to change the policy, although as legacy-type policies go, thought going to Mars made more sense than this Iraq thing. At least with planetary travel, you do kind of know when you've reached your goal.
41, Let me just make this simple enough that it bars itself down. See, we're going to let Brent Scowcroft and Jimmy Baker fog up our moral clarity the day that pigs wear lipstick. In other words, not under my watch.
Okay. It's your legacy.
Guess what, 41? I'm not thinking about how I'm going to look to historians.
No? I thought Condi
said... Yeah, we're concerned with the verdict of history.
No.
But not the history written by man.
Oh. No, we got it. Forgot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 43. Well, look, congratulations on the regretting you did do and regrets on the regretting you didn't.
Okay, 41, I appreciate the part of that that's meant for my appreciating.
Good deal. You take care of 43.
It's taken care of, 41.
Succeed at last. Yeah. Persecution, you must be. Win or lose, you gotta get your sheep. You got your mind set on a dream. Succeed at last. Don't you know me? Listen, Rome was not built in a day. Opposition will come your way. But the hotter the battle you see, be the sweeter the victory now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it.
succeed at last. Don't you know it? Don't I show me?
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns to you next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show. On channel 136, it's Sirius Satellite Radio. And what am I missing? And available as a free podcast, of course, at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like our opponents in the war not having the determination to defeat us, if you'd agree to join me then, would you? Really? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks, and thanks to Jennifer Lawson and Bob Dunn here at WWNO in New Orleans for helping to make today's program possible. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. Here's hoping we're ready. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. From New Orleans, Louisiana, have a good weekend. The honorary doctor is out.